Welcome to The Edge, a podcast for all things leadership and teams. I'm Jenny Miller, founder of Management Dynamics and team coach.
And I'm Alison Grieve, also founder of Management Dynamics and also the team coach.
We wanted to tell you about a new book that we have just written and it's just been published. It's called Leading Edge: Strategies for Developing and Sustaining High-Performing Teams. Ali and I have written it together, co-authors. It's been an amazing process. And we really encourage you to purchase it via Amazon. It's available on Kindle and in print edition, but also in any of the good bookshops. So it's in Waterstones and Forbes and all sorts. So we'd love to hear what you think when you've bought it.
And our podcast today is going to be about the principles of high performance. We've narrowed it down to seven principles, which we believe if you focus on these seven things, you will get a high-performing team. And we're going to explore each of those seven principles in turn. So what's our first one?
So the first one is all about the dynamics within the team. So you cannot get to high performance if you don't focus on the various dynamics in the team. And we would say that there are five key ones that you need to consider. So those edge dynamics are reason, results, routines, relationships, and resilience. And you can see what those edge dynamics look like really quite easily when you look at a team and teams experience them. So it's easy for a team to discuss them. And when we have a poor dynamic going on in the team, we'll see things coming up like lots of frustration by the lack of clarity or, you know, conflict or many other things. People are bored. They might be overworked, burnt out. People feel undervalued, lost in how are things going. And they might all be focusing on their individual work and tasks and not have particularly strong bonds with all the other team members.
What about when they've got great dynamics then? What's the difference? What do you start to see when a team has that?
Well, you can really see high levels of engagement. I mean, the passion and the energy within the team and the levels of engagement are completely different. Teams are capable and able to sustain high performance when they've got those dynamics nailed. And they continuously learn and grow together. And they enjoy doing that and do it off their own bat. They're not being told to do it, something they do together. And they truly appreciate what the benefits that they gain from being a team and working together that they get as individuals. So it's not just about the team. It's actually there's a real win as an individual in being a high performing team.
Yeah. And you can really see when a team has got great dynamics happening, when it hasn't, can't you? It's obvious to a external party looking in.
Yeah.
It's also really obvious to the team members themselves.
Yeah, because I mean they get great results. There's no doubt about it that high performing teams nail the results, and if the dynamics are all working well, then they will get those great results. But it's also how the team feels. So they feel better about being in the team and about the work they're doing and about each other. Well.
And both are really crucial, aren't they? You can't have results without great dynamics.
No.
You can't have great dynamics and not achieve results. You've got to have both.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to bring both together. So focusing on the dynamics in the team will start to redress that balance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that's where we would start. So what about the second one, Jenny?
I really love this one. I think it's so important, so often overlooked, and yet we kind of get it intuitively, I find. When I start to talk about this one with teams, they really resonate with it.
Yeah.
And this is a common identity and a culture of inclusion.
Mm.
So I think often organizations and people just generally think that a team automatically has a great sense of identity just because they all work for the same leader or they've got a specific functional name, there's a hierarchy here. Well, obviously the sales team is going to feel connected because they're all salespeople, right?
Yeah.
It's not, doesn't work like that. You don't automatically create identity through a team name or the fact that you all report to the same boss. It's not enough to sustain high performance, is it?
No.
It might give you a sense of some sense of connection because you are part of the same part of the organization. But you need more than that. It needs to be deeper than that,
yeah,
in order to really create the performance that we're talking about here. So that's the, yeah, this deeper common identity, something which connects everyone to each other and everybody to the reason why the team exists in the first place.
And when you see teams with high levels of identity, they're like a bit of a tribe. You know, they people notice them. They feel like that. They feel a bit different from everybody else because they've got that sort of similar thing. But they also have accountability for, you know, what they're doing and resolving poor dynamics. So it goes back to those dynamics, but they'll sort them out. Because they know that that's important. And they talk to each other and they communicate each other and they keep everybody in the loop. They share frustrations. They don't just pass them off or sit on them, and they solve the issues. And they're really inclusive and loyal to each other. The pride they have together is really well demonstrated.
Yeah. Whereas if you don't have that happening, then team members will look to the leader or HR or somebody else, right, to resolve any poor dynamics in the team. They'll be going, you know, you sort it out. It's your responsibility, not ours, to do that. Communication would be with the leader rather than with each other.
Yeah.
So there's an upwards communication rather than lateral. They'll share frustrations about the team to others outside of the team.
It's not nice.
And this is when cliques can appear in teams as well. So this people generally crave some kind of connection with others, and cliques appear in teams when you haven't got that connection with everybody in the team. You know, so you're creating a connection with maybe two or three others, maybe just one other, and at the expense of everybody else. And that's exclusion, actually. It's not inclusion.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really crucial to be working to create high levels of common identity and inclusion so that people really feel that sense of belonging deeply in a team. And that's when the magic really starts to happen.
Well, it means that people can be their best selves in the team, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one of the phrases that I hear a lot with teams, right, and this is one of my, you know, indicators that they probably haven't got a common identity, they're probably not really for being as inclusive as they could be, is when you talk about team, they'll often say, and which team are we talking about again? And so that's a signal for me that they don't feel this connection to this bunch of people that they're with here. They're thinking about another team, maybe the team, probably the team that they lead, as being more important, as having precedence. But they're also just demonstrating a confusion about, well, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, and no sense of tribe, real belonging, yeah, which is what you need if you're going to have that common identity and a real inclusion culture.
Yeah.
So building on that, you want to create a place, if it's going to have a common identity and inclusion culture, you need to have increased interdependence. And, you know, there's lots of talk at the moment about the world of complexity and how you need more people to solve our complex problems. And so teams will need to build this interdependence to be able to survive in that. And to be truly high performing, we need to have much better collaboration. And that's only, you know, realized when you find out where the best value interdependencies are. So we're not saying everybody has to be involved on everything.
Yeah, that's the route to burnout, by the way.
It is. It's the route to burnout.
Collaborate on everything. You will have meeting after meeting, meetings about meetings, and you will, this won't work, right?
Yeah. And then we're not talking about creating consensus on everything. It's where it adds value and where it's really useful to the individuals and the team as a whole. So it's important for the team to actually consider where to have those interdependencies and plan for them intentionally.
Yeah. And that's where that edge dynamics of results, for example, comes in. If you're really clear about your team accountabilities, your team results, then those are the things that you are interdependent upon each other for.
Yes.
So being really clear about that makes this bit much, much easier. So you're collaborating on the bits that where it makes the biggest difference to the team, and therefore the organization, not on everything.
No. Yeah.
So you're using your time wisely, you're targeting it in on the stuff that makes the biggest difference. And that's when you'll get interdependence that's really healthy and gives something back to people, you know, creates energy rather than saps them of it, and so on.
Yeah. So when teams have low levels of interdependence, what we see is obviously silo working. Everybody just does their own tasks and they don't think about the handovers between what they're doing and the next one. So things can fall through the gaps or be duplicated. They only talk about their own personal objectives, and they might say that there are no team objectives as well. So they know why the team exists, but they only have their own.
Or it's a collection of their own.
It's a collection.
Yeah, it's just added up to make many, many objectives.
Yeah. They compete for resources, whether it's budget, people, whatever, they'll compete for them to get their stuff done. And they might have some interest in what other people are doing, but not really. Certainly not the detail.
It's probably just an intellectual interest. It's not a real deep interest because I have a interdependence with that person, or, you know, there's a reliability between us to get our team objectives achieved. That, yeah, it just doesn't happen that way, does it? It's just more, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, just because I'm interested in what you're saying, rather than, you know, I've got some skin in the game here.
Yes. And then when they've got high levels of interdependence, what we really see there is they working on those value-added tasks that they've identified where they could make a real difference by collaborating. They share resources, give up time, give up money, give up budget, whatever it is, they share the resources to get those team objectives done. And they discuss them and they measure them and they track them and they see how everybody builds on it. And they're also really interested in each other's work because there's a connection.
Another of these principles is a sense of untapped potential. So creating and generating a sense of untapped potential in the team. What we find is that teams need to be excited about this idea of high performance. They have to want it. They have to believe that more is possible than they've currently got. Otherwise, you don't get that desire to be a part of this. They'll just check out. They also have to believe that the team can be greater than the sum of its parts. There's something more to be had here. So ultimately, that idea of untapped potential and a benefit ultimately to them personally, they've got to get that, they've got to see that.
Yeah.
So that's a really crucial one to be working on really early on in all of this, is how do I create a sense of untapped potential? And when you've got it, this motivates them to engage in a high performing teams process and with each other much more readily.
Yeah. And it really is a mindset. So often when we start working with teams, they often feel overwhelmed by just what the work could be that we're talking about to find that untapped potential and move to a different way of working, in effect. And they can't even think about how working on the team could benefit them personally. They just see it as a potentially waste of time when they could just be getting on with their own tasks. They might be cynical as well. And often are, and they're my favourites, actually, when working with teams. I love those cynics because they highlight that there is an untapped potential. They just can't see it yet. And they can be really reluctant to dedicate their time because they just don't see the value in the whole process.
Yeah. Whereas if they've got a high sense of untapped potential, they're really excited about the possibilities of what developing the team could bring to them personally, as well as to the organization. And they can really easily step into the future and imagine what this team will be like when it's achieving high performance. They can see that, you know, whereas if it's not there, they just can't even go there. It's so different. And they exude confidence that it's worth putting the effort in. So they want to do it. They're going to do it. Yes, up for it. And then they're willing to give that energy and time to developing the team. So yeah, this one is such a crucial one, I think, in order to get to that high performance, you've got to have this mindset first.
And you need the leader to really buy into it and have that energy because, you know, even when we're talking about the team, the leader sets the stage with that energy and believing that there is an untapped potential there, that something could be better and it's working smarter and differently as a team to support each other.
Yeah. And that leads me to think, actually, you don't need everybody to be there straight away.
No.
You just need a couple of people, ideally a leader first, right? But at least a few other people in the team to sense this untapped potential, and then it starts to get infectious and it infects everybody else with that same sense. And gradually you get everybody there.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing, that you can't expect everybody to move through these principles and the things that we're talking about at the same pace, and particularly this one, because it is a mindset shift. And that infectious piece of, you know, getting some people bought in, then that just drives the momentum of the rest of the team eventually.
The next one is about similarities and difference. Now, similarities and differences are both really important in teams. they're ultimately the lifeblood of a high-performing team. First of all, if we look at similarity, you need a sense of similarity in a team to build things like trust and psychological safety. That's the essence. If we really boil it down, ultimately what's happening underneath trust and psychological safety, it's a sense of I'm similar in some way to these people in the room.
Yeah, I'm safe because we're the same. Yeah.
Exactly. In some small way. And it doesn't even need to be real. It just can be, it just needs to be perceived.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, we need to perceive that people are like us in some small, tiny way to develop the sufficient levels of trust that we're talking about here. But differences are also really important, aren't they? Because they are the root of things like innovation, problem solving, expanding team perspectives. If we only have similarities, if we've just got a bunch of clones in a team, we're not going to create the outcomes that we need. You need difference in order to create diversity of thought, to come up with different solutions to problems that you've never come across before. So if we only have similarity, what you get is groupthink.
Yeah.
We get stuckness. You get status quo. You get boring, let's face it. So it's both of these are so important, and but they're paradoxical, aren't they? They're opposites, and so holding both in a team is really, really important, but also quite tricky.
It's like a polarity, isn't it? So there's no answer, because you actually just need to hold both.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got to explore both, and you've just got to lean into both. And when a team doesn't celebrate both the similarities and the differences, maybe they focus on the similarities only, or they get divided by the differences, they can really struggle to articulate what their similarities and differences even are. They don't see them. They maybe only see the differences and not the similarities, or vice versa. Or they might rely on their similarities to get things done. So they just focus in on that. This is the stuff that we're similar and you know, this is familiar, and that's how we get things done around here. And actually, that just then leads to this kind of circular thinking that's no good.
Well, then you just get that groupthink and the same stuff over and over.
And the same problems probably popping up over and over.
Probably reconfirming status quo rather than moving things forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can also get frustrated by the differences in the team. Mm-hmm. So they don't value them in the way that we know is so important in teams. So, you know, the guy who takes things very literally is frustrating to the team, when actually that literalness, if that's a word, can actually be really powerful. Or maybe different strengths that difference brings that they haven't even noticed yet. They just see the frustration that gives them.
It just makes people stop and think.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the real power is to get people then to flex their behavior. And so if they're low in celebrating similarities and differences, they won't flex to adjust to each other. And when they're high, we will see that they can articulate similarities and differences, and then they can use them to make better decisions, or to use it to overcome frustration and to flex their behaviors.
So the next one is about sustained high performance. So high performing teams don't just achieve high performance once or occasionally. They do it over a sustained period of time. And they do this without support from anybody else. It's a self-sustaining thing. It's something they can keep going themselves because they have the routines in place and the relationships and all the other edge dynamics. And they are continuously focusing on how they maintain and sustain that high performance. You know, we know that lots of teams achieve high performance occasionally, don't they? They get to it by accident sometimes.
Luck.
Yeah, absolutely. But we don't think that any team can sustain high performance for a long period of time without intentionally focusing on everything that we've been talking about.
And that's really what makes the difference, isn't it? That's absolutely it. It's the high performing teams have those practices, they have those routines, they have that way of working and connecting with each other that enables them to recharge, reflect, and sustain high performance over long periods of time. They renew and refresh as people join and leave. They're still able to sustain that high performance.
So what do we see when a team doesn't have this ability to sustain high performance? What are some of the symptoms that you might see that go, the indicators that team isn't doing this stuff?
Well, you see it with, you know, scrums and crises, and teams peak with a high performance and they all know that they've got there, but then they burnt out.
Because they're putting in so much energy to it, aren't they? They're having to, you know, they really kind of work a lot harder than they otherwise would for a period of time, and they can't sustain it. They can't keep it going because they're putting so much energy into it.
Yeah,
I think those examples you just gave are perfect. I think of many that come to mind that maybe I've been part of or I've witnessed other teams being part of, who, you know, that for 3 months it's all hands to the pump. They're all working on it really hard, and at the end of it they are exhausted.
Yeah,
and they need time off to recoup and recharge. So that high level of burnout, I think, is one that pops up, isn't it, a lot.
Another, you know, so sometimes you don't have those peaks, but the other thing you would see would be inconsistent performance. So sometimes it would rise up, but then because of workloads or what they're doing, you would get lowers. So generally, they're probably achieving their KPIs, but nothing exceeding, nothing amazing, and they'll often miss some things. And you might see mistakes, and they don't learn from mistakes. They keep repeating the same old thing. So very stuck in the status quo. And particularly when people are joining or leaving, they can't adapt to that very fluidly. So the team will be quite stuck, and they'll rely on the team coach to help them.
Or somebody else.
Right? Or someone
else. They haven't got a team coach. It might be a leader or an external party of some sort to help them with their performance. They can't do it by themselves. They've got to keep on having these injections of development. So there's something there that's lacking in terms of that sustainability.
And there might be a frustration with each other as well, because they're not achieving what some of them think that they could do.
And of course, the opposite of this is when they actually are achieving and sustaining high performance, they're able to be resilient. So the burnout doesn't happen because they're able to re-energize themselves, and they sub for each other and manage those peaks and troughs better. And this means that they consistently achieve their KPIs. You know, they're always smashing it. And they learn from their mistakes. So they do make mistakes still. Of course they do. It's just they don't repeat them because they learn what needs to be learned and implement it.
Yeah.
And they have their own self-managing practices for high performance. They can do it by themselves. They have the ability to reflect on what's going well in this team and what's not. How are the dynamics in this team? You know, what needs to be different here? And they can keep that going by themselves without anybody else.
And I think there's something about that adaptation. The team adapts to new contexts, new ways of working, and how they're all individually growing as well. And, you know, supporting each other and looking out for each other and for the changing workloads and contexts. And so that makes a very different view. Mm. So the last one, of course, is, and it builds onto what we've just been talking about, Jenny, is broadening a team's perspective. Teams just don't operate in isolation. They're part of a system, and the team members need to look beyond their internal workings and look out at the whole system. And many team members do look at certain stakeholders. They look at some suppliers, but they don't often really try to understand the system and all the various influences and impacts that the system has on them as a team, but also what impact they have on the system too. And so there's a really important part in high performing teams for them to understand the system that they're part of, and really working to use that system to influence what they do.
Yeah, it's all about maximizing that influence, isn't it?
It is.
Which is ultimately the key, or one of the keys to their success. So thinking about, okay, we're part of a system. What are all the moving parts within that system? Who are the key stakeholders within that? Let's actually kind of literally map it out. And how can we influence each of those component parts to maximize the chances of high performance? So we talk about it as being both inside out and outside in. So you look at teams, high performing teams, look at it from both of those angles all the time. And they put themselves in their stakeholder shoes, and they think about, what does high performance mean to them? What are they looking for? And how are they judging the performance of this team? Which ultimately is often quite different from how the teams themselves are judging themselves.
It also means that teams start to challenge themselves to have that longer term perspective as well of what's coming next. So they can look at trends, they can forecast things better, so they can then prepare to adapt to whatever other changes are coming within the wider system. And so it really does help them focus on all the stakeholders, but actually feel much more empowered to adapt and add value as they're going.
And influence that wider system that they're part of to bend to their will rather than the other way around. And the other thing that we see when a team has a broad perspective is that they are clear about the impact that they have on the organization and therefore the value that they bring to the wider organization, because they're having those conversations. They know what success looks like from their stakeholders' perspectives. So they can see their place in that system. And they can also therefore engage with their stakeholders to increase mutual understanding of each other and to make a bigger difference to them. What about when teams have a really narrow perspective? What's happening there, Ellie?
Well, they're focused solely on the internal. And actually what you start to see is they're more impacted by what happens, you know, externally, and have feel like they have little control. They, you know, things are done to them rather than them actually.
They're at the mercy of everybody else.
What happens everywhere else. And they don't feel empowered. Yeah. And don't feel like they've got a locus, and they're certainly not confident in what they can choose or how they change and the environment that they're working in.
What I often hear them talking about, and this is one of the signs that I know that a team has a narrow perspective rather than a broad perspective, is they talk about us as a team and those guys over there as if they're completely separate. And these are their stakeholders that they're talking about. Yeah. And often they can't put themselves in the stakeholders' shoes. If I ask them to think about how the stakeholders would rate their performance right now, which is a common question I ask quite early on with a team, they find it really hard to step into their shoes. And they go, well, what they often say, we don't know. I haven't had enough conversations with them. Maybe the only person in the team who has the connection with them might be the leader, if at all. So I think that's a really important one to look out for. You know, how much in your team, how aware of your stakeholders' needs are your team members?
Yeah. So I think that's a big differentiator that we see, particularly when we're getting into those teams who are sustaining high performance. When they are sustaining high performance, they're really pushing on this systemic view of what's going on in the wider system and where they fit in it and how they can have agency in effect in having an influence on what's going to happen next for them.
Yeah, rather than kind of just feeling misunderstood and done to by the rest of the organization.
Yeah. They're really empowered and engaged. It's a very different feel for those members of that team.
Yeah, lovely. So this brings us to the end of this podcast, where we've talked about the principles of high performance. So our 7 principles, the first of which was about the dynamics within the team and paying attention to all of those dynamics. The second was having a common identity and inclusion culture and working towards that consistently. We also talked about increased interdependence, so moving away from this idea of the team members as individuals and moving towards a sense of mutuality and increased interdependence. We talked about having a sense of untapped potential and this excitement about what this team thing can bring. And we talked about celebrating similarities and differences, how important both of those are, that those polarities in a team. And we've talked about sustaining high performance, so setting a team up so that they can keep on going with high performance without any support from external parties. And finally, broadening the team's perspectives, so they take an outside in as well as an inside out approach to thinking about the team.
So how could a team not want all of that?
Yeah. And if you focus on all of these things, you're going to get to high performance, we promise you. So thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.